Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a lot on tap today. This hour, we're going to be joined by Brett Baer in a matter of moments. Rich Lowry, editor of National Review. We're covering multiple stories, including what is going to be happening on Long Island today. It's going to be the president's going to have a major rally. They're lining up already. I don't think it starts till 7:15. So they're still lining up in New York. So why would he do it? We'll discuss that possibility. Let me just tell you, just go to the Fox News app. If you ever want to see the show along with listening to the show, just click on watch and then swipe to the side to get to Fox News Radio. Then you can see what I look like finally. So let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I think, unfortunately, Israel's in a scenario where that offensive is already there. The ability to put what is likely low volatility explosives in such a sophisticated manner across hundreds, if not thousands, of devices is really a remarkable feat.
I never thought I'd see anything like it. Death by device. Israel did it yesterday with deadly and cinematic precision, booby trapping thousands of pagers that were held by thousands of Hezbollah fighters, and they detonated simultaneously at 3:30 in the afternoon, killing 12, wounding 3,000.
Number two.
He made several spontaneous comments that caused them to interview him more deeply. They referred him to the Homeland Security Investigation Unit. That is basically the FBI, the Homeland Security Department, and HSI declined to further investigate him.
Yep, that was John Solomon talking about would-be assassin Ryan Ruth's behavior over the course of years by so many people. So many questions swirling around the second assassination attempt of Trump as both Harris and Biden reach out. I say, send in the SEALs. I'll explain.
Number one.
This whole idea, if you like me, you're good, and if you don't, you're bad. I mean, I've been the victim of this. I don't hate the guy. I hate the people who vote for him. I think you're stupid. I do. I'll be honest with you. I have no respect for you.
Well, you're honest, and you lost maybe potentially 70 million people. Tracking the trail, the former king of all media, Howard Stern, tells Trump supporters he hates them. Yeah, many of you listening right now, he hates you. Plus, Trump speaks in Flint on the economy to rally today on Long Island, while VP Harris rambles with softballs in mind-numbing events in front of black journalists at a meet-and-greet yesterday. Much different from when Trump was there. First question out of the box was basically, nobody wants you here. And it got worse from there. Brett Baer, we always want you here, chief political anchor for the company, as well as special report. Welcome back.
Hey, Brian.
So your thoughts about President Trump coming to Long Island today. What do you think he's approaching? Why go to a state that he's trailing by 12?
Because it tells a story, it tells a narrative, it tells a, I'm going to go where they don't expect me to go. And New York is kind of the center of the media universe. So going there, he's going to get covered. He'll break through the noise just by going there. Does he really think he's going to win New York State? You know, he may say that he has a chance, but that's just not in the election watchers' cards. But it does make a splash. And even if he moves the needle just a little bit, it does, tell a story about he's reaching out to different people.
It does. It also, he has at least three congressional seats that are up for grabs that could decide the balance of power in the House. If he really focuses on them and his power, because he's unbelievably popular on Long Island. I can't tell you how many impromptu Trump parades, not coordinated with any Trump official, that happened on the water and down the highway for the past 8 years. So he's going to get a lot of support today in the first time in a major event after the second shooting. You talked to him after the second assassination attempt. Your thoughts?
Yeah, he Sean mentioned this on air, too. He wanted to finish his birdie putt on five. He is it's an amazing thing that the ability to compartmentalize the threat that he's facing and just going on with his life as it is. He definitely credited Secret Service for acting quickly and getting him out of there and put him in this fast cart and getting him out to the clubhouse. But I do think that it's a different take as he starts to talk about all of the Democratic rhetoric in his mind that has led to some of these people acting.
So what I'm astounded by the reaction on this time, almost immediately from almost all anchors and other networks, they were blaming Trump for what happened. So instead of saying, you know, the president, you know, has been targeted, and he's been targeted verbally. This is what you heard from NBC, from CNN, MSNBC. Cut 28.
And what you're doing, Mr. T.
Today's apparent assassination attempt comes amid increasingly fierce rhetoric on the campaign trail itself. Mr. Trump, his running mate J.D. Vance, continue to make baseless claims about Haitian immigrants in Ohio.
Right now, you have a former president who, yes, has been the target of apparent assassinations twice, but is also an instigator of political violence.
Bigger picture here, Donald Trump says that Democrats are the enemy within. He says they are destroying our country. He's called some of them vermin. Thank God Donald Trump is safe. Thank God he was not assassinated in July or this week. But my gosh, there is no comparison on the rhetoric.
It took minutes for this type of phrases to come out. Are you surprised, Brett Baer?
Unfortunately, I'm not surprised, but I do think it's really – it says something. You know, you can say that rhetoric has been raised on both sides of the aisle, but, you know, in the wake, in the hours after the second assassination attempt, maybe you hold off on that you know, analysis for a little bit. He is the guy that is, you know, in the bullseye. And I'm not surprised by it, but it is something that clearly is a part of this politics.
I love that Harris and Biden both called him, both said nice things about each other so far. They didn't say anything bad about the conversation. So I think that's a good sign. I was struck by the rest of the world's reaction. Just in the New York Times today, they interviewed a lot of people, and they're just talking about the rest of the world's reaction to the assassination, and they're worried about our election. Keir Starmer, the new prime minister of the UK, says he's deeply troubled by what's going on. He also cited that in Mexico, 41 candidates were assassinated. A French official worried the election won't end peacefully. An Italian president said they tried to put him in jail on trials with insinuations. They're scaring people about him, and it didn't work, and now they're trying to kill him. That's the German, the Italian prime minister saying that. A German editor of a leading magazine warns of an American civil war. So the outsider perspective is it looks like chaos in America, Brett.
Yeah, and listen, they're not wrong that we're on this precipice, that we're on this tinderbox. They're not, and they see it from different eyes. And I do think it's a precarious time, and you know, we all of us could do a better job of, you know, toning things down. But it is crazy how things have spiraled. And if you think about all that has transpired since June 27th, this race is unlike any other.
Right. I want you to hear a little of the exchange with Peter Ducey yesterday. Cut 25.
It's been only 2 days since somebody allegedly tried to kill Donald Trump again. And you're here at the podium in the White House briefing room calling him a threat. How many more assassination attempts on Donald Trump until the president and the vice president and you pick a different word to describe Trump other than threat?
Peter, if anything from this administration, I completely disagree with the premise of your question, the question that you're asking. It is also incredibly dangerous in the way that you're asking it.
Really? That reaction, and basically she says January 6th. January 6th is the reason, and I could play the whole bite, and he is a threat. So she isn't, no errors, no problem, keep shooting.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there are words to kind of put it all together. You know, they are still trying to have the threat to democracy. They're still trying to have that he is a threat and should not be behind the presidential seal. Still trying to have that talking point while saying they wish him well and I'm very happy he didn't get shot and I'm going to call him, you know, and there's no place for political violence. So, you know, there is, Peter is right. I mean, there is cutting through the noise here. And, you know, they're just trying to have it both ways.
Absolutely. So we're looking at an assassination attempt. We'll see where we go from here. Mark Penn said last night he believes it's a 50-50 election. Is that what the people you talk to say?
Yeah, I mean, in the national polls, I think you're going to see this tick up, and in part because you have high volume places like California and New York, and those numbers go up on people polled. But if you look at the swing states, it's essentially every swing state is within the margin of error. I'm talking 1-2 points. In some places, it's 0.4, 0.5. That is, you know, 10,000 votes.
I know.
Swinging one way or another. That is one shoe dropping the day before the election that changes somebody deciding to go out and vote or not go vote. I mean, that's how close it is.
So yesterday, a remarkable thing happened with Hezbollah. We know that they were carrying around pagers because Nasrallah, who's in charge of that terror organization, said, I'm worried that their Israelis are tracking our phones. So we ordered thousands of pagers for them to get in touch and give messages to each other. He thought he was ordering them from Taiwan. Taiwan has said, we sold the rights to this to BAC Consulting. It's an address in Budapest. Somehow it seems as though the Mossad put some explosives in every single one of them and a new switch. So when they heats up and they give them a signal, it would explode. And now we have thousands of would-be Hezbollah members blown up, at least 12 dead, hospitals flooded, when at 3:30 in the afternoon, it all detonated. I've never seen anything like this, Brad. Have you?
It's truly, truly an amazing operation. I mean, it's out of a Bond movie. They probably shouldn't have ordered the pagers from terroristpagers.com.
Yeah.
But I mean, think about the thought process and the waiting for all of this to happen, to set up the company, to get the pagers, to set up the operation, and to wait for the right moment. There are some reports that from U.S. officials that they had to do it yesterday because there was worry that Shiite militias had gotten some inkling that there was some kind of operation involving the pagers. And so they did it then. But it tracks Mossad in Israel. You know, they blew up the Hamas guy in a home in Iran that the explosives were placed 6 months earlier. I mean, that is some serious planning.
It is. And now I wonder, Hezbollah's got to be reeling from this and also freaked out by it because they killed two of their higher ups about a month ago and they thought they were safe. They didn't think anyone knew him. They had no footprint, but they blew him up in his townhouse or his apartment building. And then what you do, taking out Haniyeh in Iran at a townhouse when they went to visit during the inauguration, how they anticipated that, I'll never know. And we probably never will know. But, man, that is a tinderbox ready to blow in the Mideast. In our lifetime, Brett, I don't remember anything quite like this, a place that we are now.
I agree. I mean, you look around the world, you have China that's flexing its muscle that could act on Taiwan. That's not out of the realm of possibility. You have Russia threatening nuclear war on NATO if long-range missiles are used by Ukraine into Russia. You have Iran, you know, threatening what they're threatening. And then you have Hezbollah and Hamas saying they are going to launch another attack on Israel. I mean, it's as hot spots get around the world.
Go get him, Brett Baer, tonight at 7. Appreciate it, Brett.
6.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. 6 o'clock. My bad.
See ya.
But still, watch 6 and then Laura at 7. Listen, 1-866-408-7669. I'll be able to squeeze in some calls. Then Rich Lowry at the bottom of the hour. I want to get the perspective from your perspective. What do you think it looks like around the world that all these problems are happening between the parties, assassination attempts? That's important. Also, when it comes to yesterday's interview, we're going to compare Kamala Harris's treatment with congressional, with the black journalist unit, as opposed to Trump's. We'll get to all that in just a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
And so my plan for the economy includes what I imagine and believe and call an opportunity economy. What we can do to grow an opportunity economy. Part of my plan under my opportunity economy, what I'm talking about in terms of building an opportunity economy.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I will play a little bit later. She says the same thing, whether it's in an interview setting, a stage setting, a town hall setting. She breaks into her stump speech and she reaches for these words to try to remember stuff. It's like if you ask me to talk about poetry or classical music, I'd sit there and I'd study it and I'd get ready for the test, but then I'd forget it because I'm not interested in it. Why does she have such a hard time explaining herself? Mark, listen, WHIO in Dayton, Ohio.
Hey, Brian. Hey, just real quick on that.
On the beeper story? Yeah.
Yeah. Does that show our vulnerability here in the United States?
Sure.
China probably has that same technology. And just for example, every heavy crane that we have at our ports is made in China. And China, I know, gets the data sent from those computers. I mean, does that show our vulnerability? Maybe we should take a look at that.
Another reason to bring more manufacturing back here. But they make all our phones. So if they put that little explosives and their own little chip in there, that'll heat up and that'll blow us up too. I mean, it has happened before. It hasn't been a trend. But this, the whole world's looking at this right now. Thanks, Mark. Debbie in Jacksonville, listening on the app. Hey, Debbie.
Hello. How are you this morning?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to make a suggestion. It's actually my brother's suggestion. Fox News has a town hall with Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. Let the people ask the questions. They seem to always, the Harris team, they get to choose which media outlets get to do the debate. So don't have a debate, have a town hall.
I wonder if she'd agree to that. Would I love that? Would your brother suggest it and would bold enough to suggest on our show? Yeah, it would be great, but I don't see her doing it. And I don't think either one of them has to do another debate or a town hall with each other because they both were basically in a flat-footed tie. If one was trailing, if Harris trails in poll after poll, she will look to do something like that. But you don't want to, you know, she's not the Tom Brady of politics. She's not going to pull, she's not going to find a way to win. You know, Trump could find a way to win and he'll have a new policy. But would our country love that? Yeah. If it was truly independent, undecided voters in the audience where they both come out and they make some opening remarks, keep it to 2 minutes, then they go each do it and they both take these questions. Wow, would that be great? And then you have a follow up with the other. So you let them answer the person's questions. They'll be polite. You don't have to kill their mics. And then they'll come up and say, no, I don't believe you're not going to frack. I don't believe that you're not going to decriminalize border crossings. Why is it that you were for getting rid of private health insurance? What happened that you now changed your mind? Why don't you expand on the real reason why you're doing this? Why does Bernie Sanders say you're just doing this to get elected? Is Bernie Sanders lying? Rich Lowry's next. He never lies. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You have told four congresswomen of color who were American citizens to go back to where they came from. You've attacked black journalists, calling them a loser, saying the questions that they ask are, quote, stupid and racist. Why should black voters trust you after you have used language like that?
Right. That was some of the tune at the big conference of black journalists where Donald Trump accepted the invite and Kamala Harris had other plans. Then it quickly changed when she finally made time in her schedule to sit down and answer a few questions from that same group. I don't know. I'm wondering in retrospect, if she had easier questions, it's hard to really know, unless, of course, you had the audio up while you watched it. Listen to some of this. For example, this ridiculous question on joy and other things. Cut six.
Your opponent and Republicans have at times weaponized you laughing. Why is joy important to you to insert into this election?
Well, sometimes I think, and I'll say to whoever the young people are who are watching this,
There are some times when your adversaries will try and turn your strength into a weakness. Don't you let them. I find joy in the American people.
A little bit different. Don't you think the different tone? Rich Lowry, editor of National Review.
That so far is the best question. The most characteristic press question of the entire cycle is why do you bring so much joy into your campaigning? It's preposterous, you know, but it's worked. You know, her favorable rating has gone up 12, 15 points or whatever it is. She's deeply underwater, and all of a sudden she's about 50%, maybe a tick above or below, depending on the poll. And this is because, one, Democrats are so relieved to have Joe Biden out of the way, but two, just we've never seen such adulatory press coverage. And it's I don't know whether they can keep it up at this level all the way through till November, but they're going to try.
So do you look at it as a dead heat right now?
Yeah, maybe she's a tick ahead. It seems as though there's like a very, very, very slight debate bounce, you know, where she's instead of 2 points ahead nationally, she's three or maybe four. But she could, you know, win by 3 points nationally and easily lose. So I think the swing states is basically tied. The best poll she's had recently in any swing state is a very credible USA Today Suffolk poll that had her ahead by three in Pennsylvania. Now, if that's true, she has a good chance of winning Pennsylvania and the election. But I my read is Pennsylvania's basically tied, and most other swing states are basically tied. Good poll for Trump from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that had him a three ahead in Georgia. So, I mean, this thing, pretty much everyone said it all along. It's going to be tight. It's going to be narrow. And that's what all the polls say.
Right. Do you subscribe to the notion that Trump underpolls and has for the last two times and will again?
I do. I have, you know, you can't count on it, but I have like a plus one for Trump in any national poll I see. Now, in 2022, Democratic Senate candidates underpolled. So if that were the case, you know, Republicans would be facing a debacle. But Trump wasn't in the ballot in 2022. So I think there's for whatever reason, whether it's people don't want to tell pollsters, whether it's harder to reach his voters, I kind of in my mind's eye have a plus one for Trump on any poll.
So we're in the midst of a second assassination attempt. It's gotten the world's attention again. We're trying to figure out what's wrong. We see them act courageously in some ways and then not plan in other ways when you see how that gunman was able to camp out for all those hours. But not it was just minutes after Trump was shot and word was confirmed it was an assassination attempt. The networks this time didn't waste any time blaming Trump. Cut 28.
And what you're doing, Mr. Tate.
Today's apparent assassination attempt comes amid increasingly fierce rhetoric on the campaign trail itself. Mr. Trump, his running mate J.D. Vance, continue to make baseless claims about Haitian immigrants in Ohio.
Right now, you have a former president who, yes, has been the target of apparent assassinations twice, but is also an instigator of political violence.
Bigger picture here, Donald Trump says the Democrats are the enemy within. He says they are destroying our country. He's called some of them vermin. Thank God Donald Trump is safe. Thank God he was not assassinated in July or this week. But my gosh, there is no comparison on the rhetoric.
Well, your thoughts about their reviews of the shooting that took place and who was the impetus behind it. I don't want to sidetrack them, but the guy was for Biden, giving Biden advice. He recommended in a book that Iran assassinate Trump, and he was using quotes in his postings that are from the Biden-Harris campaign.
Yeah, so anytime you're talking about assassination attempt and you're saying how terrible it is, and then you got a but within the sentence or in the next sentence, that's a bad sign. And that's what about half of those people that were in those clips were saying. You can either say, you know, political rhetoric doesn't matter and all these acts are directly on the shooter. Or you can say rhetoric plays into violence, which is what they've said all along. Paranoid schizophrenic, tragic. He's totally out of his mind. He's totally irrational. But they blame it on Sarah Palin because she targeted Gabby Giffords for defeat in an election, right? So if that's your point of view and you're the media, you should be complaining about all the anti-Trump rhetoric. Instead, they complain about Trump. You know, they're blaming the victim. It's crazy. Brian, it's a little bit of a complicated picture. that they've created around Trump plays in some role in kind of instigating these madmen to go try to get him, try to shoot him. On the other hand, it's not as though you can point to any one thing that anyone says and say, oh, he shouldn't have said that because that put Trump in danger. And ultimately, it is on this guy, right? It's not Nancy Pelosi wasn't pulling the trigger, or he didn't pull the trigger, but you know, sitting there for 12 hours hoping to pull the trigger, or Karine Jean-Pierre, it's on him. But they're total hypocrites. You know, it's either one or the other. Rhetoric's a problem, or it's not.
So one of the most significant terror strike backs that Israel put together seems to be put together by Mossad, who was able to get some explosive liquid into pagers Hezbollah was carrying because he didn't trust cell phones because they thought Israel was listening. And they basically wounded over 3,000 Hezbollah fighters, killed 12 when their pagers exploded. Here's what Aaron Cohen said, Cut 42. He's a former IDF fighter.
This is the most significant preemptive strike against terrorism in the history of modern warfare. Israel single-handedly changed the rules through this coordinated cyber attack. It's a monster. It not only disrupts and dismantles Hezbollah's entire communication system by going after those pagers.
Yeah.
But it also creates a tremendous psychological effect like we saw just recently in Tehran with the Hamas bigwig that we took out in that structure. But this is very reminiscent to Israel taking out Yehi Ayash in 1996, June 6th. Israeli intelligence planted the first ever explosive in the cell phone of a mastermind terrorist who was responsible for all those bus bombings.
So it's pretty significant to think that Hezbollah, to think about the psychological situation where the Hezbollah now knows the IDF and their sources and their agents are everywhere. Rich, you've seen a lot of Middle East unrest. What about this?
Wow. I mean, it just takes your breath away. What a work of genius. Infiltrating the supply chain at some place for the production of these pagers and getting them in the hands of Hezbollah and then simultaneously exploding them. And Eric Cohen, that was an excellent statement from him. It's going to disrupt their communications. They're going to have to go more to like Battle of Marathon type communications where you have a guy run. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll have to use human couriers. It might be easier to track and for Israel to take out. No one who's going to have a meeting with a Hezbollah guy now is going to feel safe or want to have this meeting. It took out kind of a lower echelon of leadership at a kind of mass level. It's going to be harder to replace. So this thing is I agree. It's one of the greatest anti-terrorist strikes we've ever seen.
There's no indication that you would even get the Biden-level support from Kamala Harris. You know she wants to say more. It was the only time there was a follow-up question in the conference that she had with the three black journalists. Listen to this, Cut 41.
But in the way that we send weapons, in the way that we interact as their ally, are there specific policy changes?
Well, Eugene, for example, one of the things that we have done that I am entirely supportive of is the pause that we've put on the 2,000-pound bombs. And so there is some leverage that we have had and used.
But what do you say to those that say that's not enough, that stopping the 2,000-pound bombs the one time wasn't enough, that this administration, your possible administration, has to do more?
Well, we are doing the work of putting the pressure on all parties involved to get the deal done.
There's no, they never say we have to get to a place in which Israel no longer has to fear being attacked from Hamas or Hezbollah. They just want to get a deal done, number one. Yeah. And did you hear the follow-up after follow-up after follow-up? That's the mindset of the 20-something, 30-something Democrat, isn't it?
Yep. It is. That's what they care about, and she cares about them, right? So that's why she's kowtowing to this kind of sentiment. And we're talking about the Trump assassination. But there's always a bus with her and Waltz whenever they say they're very pro-Israel. But we need a state solution. Who's going to run the other state, right? It would be Hamas. But Israel's going too far. But we need to push them more for a deal. And Trump had a great insight in dealing with the Middle East. You back Israel to the hilt. And leverage to get a deal, right? You wouldn't have had the Abraham Accords if Trump hadn't taken approach that was totally different than the conventional one from the last 40 years. And a Harris administration wouldn't get that and wouldn't want to do that, even if they understood it.
And finally, I think that J.D. Vance, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, stop talking about kids, childless women. Why is Sarah Huckabee Sanders saying that Kamala Harris doesn't have skin in the game? We're indicating that because she doesn't have a kid of her own. That is number one. I don't know where that comes from. Should not be judging people about how many kids they have. Yeah. I don't understand where that comes from.
Yeah, I was shocked by that. You know, in JD's defense, he hasn't said it during the campaign, right?
True.
And it's been used against him, of course. But don't repeat it in real time. Make the same mistake in real time. And I love Sarah. I think she's doing a great job, and she's generally a great communicator. But don't go there. You know, there'd be a gender gap no matter what, but it's probably been an accelerant on it this time around, that whole line of argument.
All right. Rich Lair writes about the Springfield situation as well as this Cornell professor. Before you go, just to comment on this professor who said it was an exhilarating day when October 7th happened, all those Israelis were killed, over 1,000. He is now back on the Cornell campus.
Yeah, so he says he used a horrible choice of words. You know, and we all misspeak at times. But it wasn't just one word. It was his entire event was how great October 7th was. And this was a week after the attack when we knew the nature of the attack. Maybe we didn't know every single atrocity in detail, but we knew what happened. And he said Palestinians and he were both exhilarated by it. My takeaway in this column, though, is even if he went away, and I'm not sure whether he'd want to do that on free speech grounds, but there could be another one just like with the same point of view to replace him, right? This is such a pervasive sentiment on college campuses. It is more, you look at him like, oh, he's a fringe radical. No, he's close to the norm, and that's really disturbing.
Got it. Rich Lowry, always great. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, we come back. Your turn, 1-866-408-7669. Also, information on why our weapons are not going to Ukraine fast enough. It's a disturbing reason. We'll discuss it on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Covering this election year like no other, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Now, new testing is raising questions if the safety infrastructure lining U.S. roads is strong enough to handle impacts from electric vehicles, which tend to be heavier than their gas-powered counterparts. Tests showing EVs tearing through the guardrail. University of Nebraska professor Cody Stoley.
Unfortunately, these guardrail systems, which have performed very well with gasoline vehicles historically, do not appear to be containing electric vehicles when impacting with similar types of conditions.
In July, Soli's team ran this 7,000-pound electric pickup into concrete barriers commonly used as freeway medians at 62 miles an hour. Weighing 2,000 pounds more than a gas-powered pickup, the barriers contained the collision, but chunks of concrete were sent flying, and several of the 5,000-pound barriers were pushed back 10 feet, 50% more than normal. Nebraska Senator Deb Fischer.
When you went into this testing, did you expect to see what you saw?
It was eye-opening. There was a lot of damage. And again, if there would have been vehicles on the other side of that barrier, we would have seen a severe accident.
So they're talking about how heavy the electric vehicles are and how they no longer withstand the guardrails can really not contain them. And they're so heavy, they're ripping up some of the roads. No one ever thought about that. I didn't even realize that. That's a great point. You add to that a lot of people don't want them. We don't have the infrastructure to charge them. Nobody thinks we do. The money's there. Only about 8 terminals have been built. And then you factor in that without the mandates, almost no one will get them. With the mandates, there's people who are stopping making them. Hybrid was the way to go, but yet they were forcing electric cars down everyone's throat. And believe me, Trump brought that up yesterday in Flint, Michigan. That's the thing that Flint should be talking about. You know, bringing back those car manufacturers will happen. But it'll happen not if you make everybody go to electric cars. Then you're going to make the whole country switch. Less workers put those cars together, I might add. So we talk about celebrities making choices. We have Billie Eilish going to vote for Kamala Harris. Shocker. Pharrell Williams, producer or singer, songwriter, came out, is angry, Says, you got to be kidding me. Stop weighing in if you're a Hollywood celebrity, a music star. It just hurts people. It hurts your business. Be smart about it. And then Howard Stern says this, Mr. Counterculture for years, not now. Cut 12.
This whole idea, if you like me, you're good. And if you don't, you're bad. I mean, I've been the victim of this. I don't hate the guy. I hate the people who vote for him. I think they're stupid. I do. I'll be honest with you. I have no respect for you.
Okay. Guess what? You did the exact opposite. I mean, people say, well, I don't like Trump, but I understand why people would vote for him. This is the first time I have heard outside the Robert De Niro's or Al Franken's or Keith Olbermann, someone just say, I hate the people that vote for him. So that's 70 million people, maybe more this time. I hate the people that vote for him, rich, poor, working class. Instead of trying to find out why they're interested, I hate the people that vote for him. If I'm serious and I gave him all that money, I'd be so furious today, even though he'll never need money the rest of his life. That statement is more than damning, especially when a guy made his living just getting under everybody's skin, doing counterculture things, taking on the establishment. Brian, listening in Clarion, Pennsylvania. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian. Who's Howard Stern anyway? I just wanted to say that.
How old
I
are you, Brian? How old
I'm
are you?
60. I'm 60.
You know who Howard Stern is.
I know
you
who
just probably
he is,
never
yeah.
liked him.
Yeah. No, I did,
used to
but
love him.
Who likes him now? Yeah. I just wanted to say that I hope they pass out more pagers in the Middle East. And it's telling that the White House claims they didn't know anything about it, because I have no doubt that if the White House knew about it, the enemies would have been notified. That's what's terrible. And I'm so encouraged.
You're right,
by
Brian.
You're
right.
You're reporting about the world leaders and how they see what is happening in America, and they understand what the real threat to democracy is, and it certainly isn't Donald Trump. And then lastly, I happened to turn on EWTN this morning, and they reported that President Trump will be stopping at Our Lady of...
Back in a moment.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. President of the United States is going to be, the former President of the United States is going to be on Long Island coming through Manhattan. That's kind of interesting. We're just across the way. We found out a big superstar talent, Howard Stern, was coming after Donald Trump. He hates your voters. Doesn't hate Trump. He just hates you if you voted for him. Pretty unbelievable. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. That's the other definition of it. Unless you really don't care how many people listen, or you only want a certain amount of people to listen. I don't know how you get in this business and do this. Emily Dominich is with us now. Senator John Cornyn in 34 minutes. And then we go inside Israel at 10:50 with Ariel Lightstone, who served as senior advisor for the U.S. ambassador to Israel, and David Friedman. So we're talking about death by device, which has happened with these pagers. Any Hezbollah operative that was holding a pager, it blew up yesterday at 3:30. 12 died, thousands wounded. I've never seen anything like it. We're also talking about the would-be assassin. How we did not stop this guy before he acted is insanity. And then we got the latest on the trail, as Kamala Harris actually sat down for an interview. So, Emily, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
I have not
Great
seen you since the RNC.
I know. And I went to the DNC between the last
How'd
time
How'd that
we
go?
Spoke. It was wild. It was a completely different experience than the RNC, where I will say, credit to Reince Priebus, it was a lot more fun.
Right. also, but they had joy.
You know, they had joy, but like they didn't have a party. It looked good on TV, but it wasn't as fun in person.
Is that true?
Yeah, they do a really good job with production, which shouldn't surprise you because they have all the celebrities on their team.
I mean,
right?
Steven Spielberg actually played a role in this, I thought.
Yeah, it would not surprise me. It was very well produced.
Right now, we had the President of the United States have an assassination attempt on Sunday. And then yesterday, on Tuesday, he was in Flint, Michigan. Today, he's going to be in Uniondale, New York. But yesterday, talking about the economy, your thoughts about what should happen after the second shooting?
You know, I think this is where the importance of keeping the House majority really comes into play here. We have the ability with those oversight gavels to go and do a real investigation about who's responsible and make sure, frankly, that the senior officials in the administration are held responsible for failings in under their watch.
You're talking about Mayorkas?
I think so. And looking at, like, you know, we saw the head of the Secret Service resign after the first shooting. We need to be talking about this issue as a systemic problem in the service. How do we make sure they get the right training, the right tools and, frankly, the right direction from the top so that we can stop these things from happening in the future.
I'm encouraged by Senator Blumenthal.
Yes, I think so, too.
He has been he's been amazed at how inept some decisions were made on the Secret Service side. And that was in Butler. And he wants answers there. And now he wants answers here.
I was going to say the same is true in the House. We've even seen, you know, folks like AOC say we don't know enough about the shooting that happened, the original shooting that happened with President Trump. So when we get that kind of bipartisan agreement, there's a real problem here. And we need to make sure we follow through.
I hope so. It's almost a relief to see people to understand that the danger right now is Trump. But there's going to be somebody else in danger tomorrow. And it might be somebody in your party. And look at Steve Scalise.
Right.
We can't forget about that. That
right.
was a
Absolutely.
Bernie Sanders fan. But one thing is pretty clear. It's not a mystery what this guy, Ryan Ruth, stood for. This guy quoted Joe Biden, tried to give Joe Biden advice, urged Iran to assassinate Donald Trump. But yet everyone says, well, we don't really know the motivation. Basically, we know his motivation.
Right. And then you look at the thread on CNN yesterday was, you know, this is a result of President Trump and his own rhetoric and almost like, you were asking for it. That's crazy. We have to be looking at what are we doing? What are we saying from the mouthpiece of the, frankly, mainstream media to say, you know, we're encouraging folks to think that Donald Trump getting reelected could be the end of the world. That's not healthy.
I think some of it's sincere. The other is they fear he's going to get a bump from this. Because he got a huge bump last time, and then Joe Biden bounced out, and everyone forgot about the cover of Time magazine and fight with blood on his face. But just to back up your point, here's a little of it. Cut 27.
The confluence of two very bad things going on in the Republican Party. On one side, the attempts to divide, to enrage the population, to put out false rumors and misinformation.
You don't get to be a very big part of the problem and then pretend that it's just the other people on the other side who caused this.
It's not this both sides stuff.
It's a bunch of...
Yeah. Because it's not correct. Right. It is not both sides. It is one clear side. And you can point to many, many reports. You can point to all kinds of stuff that's been reported. You guys have to pull it back. This is not us or them. This is you got to stop doing what you're doing, JD.
What do you say to that? I mean, she used to be a comedian.
I mean, it's The View. You're only going to get one side of the story from that desk since Meghan McCain left the show. So I think, you know, honestly, we shouldn't be surprised to hear this from the left. It's what they say all the time. Their go-to talking point is to blame President Trump for everything that happens.
Do you think if 3 years from now, Trump wins or not, he's out? Do you think when Tom Cotton, Marco Rubio, who and some other star emerges, they're treated like Trump? Or do you think that Trump is getting this... There's something about Trump that puts these people over the top.
You know, I think they get over the top with every candidate we put forward. You know, you can go back and look at the way they treated Mitt Romney or George Bush or John McCain, and they acted like they were the end of the world at the time that they were the nominee for the Republican Party. Now they want to look at them with rose-colored glasses and say, look, they're so much better than Trump. But they've done this to us over and over and over again. And I think it gets back to your point in the opening about how, you know, they want to vilify folks on the right from top to bottom.
So... President Trump was out yesterday, was talking for the first time in public about what goes on. Today, he's actually going to do a full-blown rally. I know for a fact, and they called a press conference on Monday. I saw it myself. It's right by Hofstra, Nassau Coliseum. You can't even go anywhere. They're not even letting people except VIPs park in the parking lot, which I think is a little insane, because where are you going to park? It's Uniondale. It's a very, very busy suburb. But I'm not worried about the security here. But down the line, I'm a little worried about the security in an open-air event. Trump talked about it yesterday, what he thought, what he knows. Cut 17.
Well, it's been a great experience. It's a dangerous business, however, being president. It's a little bit dangerous. It's, you know, they think race car driving is dangerous. No. They think bull riding, that's pretty scary, right? No. This is a dangerous business, so we have to keep it safe.
Right, and he praised the Secret Service, but you got to wonder who's doing the perimeter. We're just civilians. We're not security experts. But if a photographer goes to that very spot to take a shot of the president, picture of the president, why wouldn't a would-be assassin?
Yeah, I mean, I will give it to the Secret Service. They have an impossible job. They have to protect against every possible threat at every given time, and they have limited resources, and that is absolutely true. But I also think that's where, like, the role of Congress comes in a little bit, is let's have a real discussion about whether they have the resources they need. We shouldn't just throw money at it. Let's look at the problem and make sure that they have the resources and training and ability to do the best job they can in those large environments.
So, Lawrence is for Fox & Friends is going to go out to Pennsylvania and is going to see about the fracking, talk to the community. They are very nervous. What is underreported is right now there are no new leases for LNG permits. They're not drilling. They're not doing anything. At a time in which Russia is providing a ton of natural gas and oil, we have no. We could be doing that and helping our allies, but we're not leaving them any choice.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because on the LNG export pause, we actually saw a letter from a number of House Democrats asking the Biden administration to reverse that position because it is so unpopular with their stakeholders back home to say, hey, why wouldn't we use cleaner American natural gas and compete with Russia and frankly displace one of our adversaries overseas? Why are we choosing to let Russia dominate this market? That's what we've seen from the Biden-Harris administration over and over and over again on energy, is let other people lead and put America in the backseat. And frankly, it leads to a dirtier environment, more emissions around the world, and higher prices.
But why is that? Some Democrats, you said, are upset. But even with leadership, like, why would Joe Biden put himself and initially and now his vice president in jeopardy? Why that isn't widely reported? Because you're trying to win over Pennsylvania and show them you've seen the error of your ways. Fossil fuels do work. And do matter. Why is that not brought out?
Well, and I would say, I think, you know, you Vice President Harris can say over and over again that she supports fracking now, but that at the end of the day, they have to keep their supporters on the progressive left happy, and that LNG pause is entirely designed to do that.
Where are the left going to go?
Exactly. They just complain online about how they really, really hate fracking and we should ban it. But this is just a fundamental misunderstanding about the best way to reduce emissions, too. It doesn't meet their goals. It doesn't meet our goals. And it does is play into the hands of folks like Russia overseas.
So we understand, too, that they won over, according to the New York Post and their sources, they won over the million man march. Russia has lost a million people between death and injury removed from the battlefield. And they have called up another 180,000. It looks like there is something like 80,000 pulled off the battlefield for the Ukrainians. They're still moving forward. But now the Ukrainians are hitting inside Russia in a drone attack on a weapons depot. They took 500 square miles of a city. They're not moving at all. They're holding it. But in the big picture, this president has to make a big decision. Do we let him use the ATACMS and HIMARS and the UK long-range missiles to hit inside Russia? Russia has come back again with threats. I think they're empty, to say this is like we're war with NATO. This is a huge decision. We shouldn't have to make it. If you're going to give them weapons, just use them. Your thoughts about where it's going to go?
You know, I would be surprised if President Biden made a strong decision in one way, shape, or form here, because I think they've tried to avoid making a choice here. But I agree with your point that if we're going to give weapons to our allies overseas, they should be allowed to use them in a way that's most effective for their defense. We're providing them with tools. We shouldn't be directing them on how to use them.
Right, and holding them back. And when you tell Russia you can only use a certain amount, they're going to set up in a certain area right where those missiles stop, put their tanks in a place that they feel impervious. That's while the Ukrainians get their grid blown up, schools destroyed, cities ransacked.
Absolutely. It's back to this sort of like red line foreign policy, where when we draw a line that tells our enemy exactly, or our adversary exactly, what point we're going to stop trying. And I think setting those boundaries for the Ukrainians is a mistake if we're going to arm them.
Right. Kevin McCarthy used to work with him.
Absolutely.
What do you think his next move is?
You know, I think he's having a lot of fun getting to speak his mind freely and to talk to folks and support the candidates that he supports. I know he's still doing a lot of fundraising and giving a lot of money to Republican candidates, so I think he'll continue to try to grow that majority.
Do you think that if Trump wins, he joins that staff somehow?
I would be skeptical, but you never know. He's got a good heart for service.
So. Why do you think that?
Because I think, you know, he has a lot of influence by working to recruit candidates on the outside. And that's something he'd have to give up if he went inside a Trump White House. I think Kevin McCarthy's legacy as speaker and Republican leader was that he recruited this class of frontline Republicans who can win in swing districts. I think that's what we're seeing. If we're ever to hold the House this fall, it's going to be because of his work doing that. And I think he wants to continue to engage.
Yeah, I mean,
there.
That's why he actually is extremely popular in the House. It was just a couple of knuckleheads Here's what Ken McCarthy said about what he's seen from the Harris candidacy. Cut 16.
I will tell you, inside the Capitol, even the Democrats talk about it.
Really?
How protected she is. Yeah. The interesting thing is she doesn't have many friends. She doesn't have many staff because no one could stay with her. She has one of the highest turnover rates. And every time you look, they put her into this job without any accountability. And they're not excited. They're just excited it's not Biden. They'd rather have anybody else. And this is all you're seeing in the polls. She is still, to this day, her poll numbers are below Hillary, where Hillary Clinton was 8 years ago today.
Final thought on that, because that is a great point, because he was trailing Joe Biden by 7 at this point, and I think Hillary by 6 or 8.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we've seen this. It's in anybody but Joe Biden in this race. And I think some of the, you know, the quote unquote joy we see from the left is manufactured because they're just hoping they have a chance in November. And if President Trump is smart, he will focus on the economic issues that separate him from the Biden-Harris presidency and give him an edge with regular Americans.
Think he will?
I sure hope so.
Right. I think it's very unique to see a president that, if you just keep him on policy, he wins.
Every time.
When we talk about dogs and cats and I hate Taylor Swift, that's the problem.
Yep, it's only a distraction.
Emily Dominich, thanks so much. Senior VP at Boundary Stone Partners and former senior advisor to Kevin McCarthy and this guy named Mike Johnson. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks so much for having me.
Back in a moment. Then at the bottom of the hour, Senator John Cornyn, big press conference 2 days ago on this killer gang from Venezuela setting up shop in a city near you, sadly.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All these polls are half and half. My last poll came out 50-50. There's some movements, but this race is not over. There's about 19% who still haven't made up their mind yet. For sure, they're going to be looking at both these candidates. Anyone who tells you they know how this race is going to come out is just flipping a coin.
That is Mark Penn, who is actually, you know, as you know, that he's been a pollster for Clinton twice and Hillary once. And he came out and says, I can't figure this thing out. He also said that was the worst moderated debate ever in his lifetime. And he wants an investigation into ABC to find out about their interaction, if there was any, with the administration and with the Harris camp. Also important to point out is that David Muir, who is number one by far in the nighttime ratings in the evening news, has lost 12% since the debate. 12% of his audience. Still high. I get it. But when you lose 12%, that's a lot of money. And that's a lot of viewers. A lot of people turned off by the biasness. Know what he called it? Noise. That's more of an insult. Incredible. I'm just also struck, as Mark Penn talks, unrelated to how with kid gloves Kamala Harris, the vice president, was treated with yesterday. And not that it was that unexpected, but it doesn't really help you. If you could just get direct answers and a follow-up question, I don't really understand what you meant by that. Could you be more specific? I think it works for everybody. Alex over in Brooklyn. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I have two things on that NABJ interview, because number one, she was talking about how Republicans are making fun and ridiculing her for her joyful laughter. It's not joyful laughter when you laugh because you don't have an answer to give the American people. It's not joyful laughter when you're asked about going to the border and you say, well, I haven't been to Europe either. Ha, ha, ha. No, it's not joyful laughter. It's not giving a damn laughter. That's why she was laughing, because she doesn't find it serious enough, the situation the American people are dealing with the border. And then with abortion, the other thing she said was, the government shouldn't have a say over your body. But then she says Roe v. Wade is something she wants to put in place, which after 15 weeks, the government would have a say on what you can do with your body. So she's contradicting herself. Like, this is one of the strong things she's saying.
I don't think 15 Trump weeks. Isn't it 24 weeks?
She said Roe v. Wade. Oh, 24. But whatever it is, at some point she does agree that the government should say have a say on your body. So she's lying to her voters by saying only Trump is the one that says the government should be able to tell you when you can't have an abortion. So that's what I thought stood out to me during that interview.
Oh, Alex, thanks so much. I mean, there were so many times. Thank you for the call over in Brooklyn. There's so many times where I thought there would have been follow up questions to make her clarify what she meant. But I thought it was going to be the Jake Tapper, Dana Bash. We're just going to let it out there and let the two candidates call each other out because they had two opportunities to retort with the format. But when you start calling out Trump and not her, I didn't realize till the end it was zero times. But look, just to show you how big a deal that was, I think 63 million people watched. I don't think anybody's talking about the debate anymore. A lot has to do with the assassination, of course. But now there's just so many other things going on. There's appearances that got to happen, got to take place. And now it's just to sprint to the election and try to get as many groups as possible. Yesterday, Trump came out and said, we're going to have a little bit of change of policy that will help New Yorkers. That SALT deduction will come back, meaning state and local government taxes can be deducted, which hurt all the blue states during the tax reform. But what it did is provide revenue in the tax reform to balance out the tax cuts. You're getting rid of a you're adding back a tax deduction. So at some point, you got to get some more revenue in there. But the president continues to respond to what he thinks would put more people's money in their own pockets.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I am officially declaring TDA a foreign terrorist organization. We will bring the full weight of the government against the TDA. By declaring TDA a foreign terrorist organization, Texas will use the courts to halt their operations, use civil asset forfeiture to take their property, use enhanced criminal penalties to keep them in jail behind bars for longer periods of time. At this time, I'm going to sign that proclamation. Texas is aggressively going after these foreign terrorist organizations of TDA.
So that was a press conference on Monday talking about the reason to crack down on the Venezuelan street gang who really go after and do sex trafficking, kids, torture houses. They're as bad as it gets. You can see them by the neck tattoos. They're proud to wear a lot of the Bulls stuff, the Chicago Bulls uniforms, and some of their action wear. It's unbelievable. And they're coming here by the thousands, just like Trump said. By the way, he wasn't talking hyperbole. He's actually saying they're letting their killers in. Senator John Cornyn knows this. He's a Texas senator. Unanimously passed yesterday, the Senate passed the Cornyn Southern Border Transparency Act. Senator, first off, on this Venezuelan gang, put in perspective how bad these guys are.
Well, you know, MS-13 was the gangs, the Central American gangs that had the reputation for being the biggest, baddest people around. And the Venezuelan gangs now transcend MS-13 in terms of their violence, in terms of their involvement in all the criminal activity that you mentioned. And unfortunately, the Biden administration continues to allow Venezuelans and Cubans and Nicaraguans and one other country to come in 30,000 slots a month, 360,000 a year, and gives them a work permit when they show up. So this is just an additional incentive for more and more people to come. And I don't think they're adequately vetting the people that are coming through, as we've seen by the various acts of violence and crimes that have been committed against innocent Americans by some of these migrants.
I mean, the numbers are through the roof in terms of people on the FBI terror watch list. There's no doubt about it. And the numbers are through the roof about how many have come through since Biden took office. But they have slowed down lately. What's your theory on why less are coming through right now?
Well, I think it's a shell game, and which is one reason why we needed this bill to pass, which it did, as you pointed out, unanimously yesterday. We need to get it out through the House quickly and to the president's desk. They realized they really could not oppose this transparency requirement. But when I was in the border most recently, a couple of weeks ago, this is what the Border Patrol told me. Essentially, people show up at the ports of entry, and they schedule an appointment on the CBP One app, which is Customs and Border Protection app, schedule an appointment, and then they are allowed released into the country with a work permit. Again, this is just a further incentive, and so people will keep coming. To the extent that there has been some reduction in numbers, the cartels are smart, and they realize there's a lot of visibility on this issue right now during the presidential campaign. And it is there's about 10,000 migrants that are waiting in Mexico just to make the crossing into the United States, but I think it's a combination of factors, but we need to know exactly what the factors are and quit not allow the Biden-Harris administration to hide the ball.
So right now, year to date, there's been 2 million, just over 2 million have crossed in 2024, 2.4 in 2023, 2.3 in 2022, in 2021, 1.4. That's what he took over. Suspected terrorists on the list, already this year, 146. Last year, 249. Year before, 165. 2021, 118. And fentanyl is even through the roof, too. So these are the numbers that Trump and others should run on, but they keep on parrying back. Why did you guys not pass the bipartisan immigration deal put forth by Lankford, Murphy, and Sinema? What's your answer to that, Senator Cornyn?
That's a straw man. This bill would not have secured the border. It might have marginally helped some, but here's the big problem. If Biden and Harris won't enforce the current law, what gives you any confidence they would enforce that law? I think they were just looking for some political lifeline because they realized that they were hemorrhaging support based on their open border policies. And those haven't changed. I mean, they've become very brazen about talking about a pathway to citizenship for the people who are in the country and then presumably register them to vote Democrat. So I don't think people should be fooled by all of these, the straw man on this bill that was being discussed. We discuss a lot of different things around here, but unless they're signed into law, they don't count.
So you're very calm and cool by nature. It takes a lot, in my view, to get under your skin. But I think the rest of the world is alarmed by this second assassination attempt. I'm just looking at some of the quotes. Keir Starmer, the new prime minister, says he's deeply troubled by what's going on in America, not optimistic about how we're going to pull off a smooth election. The Italian president said they tried to bring Trump down with trials, with insinuations, by scaring people. They did not work. Now they are trying to kill him. Russia and China must be loving it. A German editor from the leading newspaper is predicting a civil war after the election. So what you must be hearing some from outside. It looks like chaos here from the outside perspective.
Well, the Secret Service has just been an absolute disaster, starting with the first assassination attempt. When they basically delegated to local law enforcement their primary responsibilities, which are to protect the president and the dignitaries that they are assigned to cover. So there's an ongoing investigation into that. The second one, we know that some of these words and some of the rhetoric can be an incitement to people who are unstable or who might be predisposed to commit acts of violence. But, you know, they want to say that President Trump is a threat to democracy. What's a threat to democracy is inciting somebody, an unstable person, to commit an act of violence because of politics. And I think they need to calm their rhetoric down. And I think we do need to reform the Secret Service and to provide adequate protection for all of our political candidates that the Secret Service is supposed to cover, and we are on a pathway to do that. But it is a disaster as we speak.
Are you somebody that thinks they need more money? They say they need more people, but do they need more money?
The problem is that's the typical Washington answer: is just give us more money and we'll fix it. But that's not the solution. You know, we had the acting director of the Secret Service testify in front of the Judiciary Committee the other day, and he talked about the superior nature of the training and the people that serve in the agency, which I have always believed that this was sort of the best of the best.
Yeah.
And then that they delegated to local law enforcement the protection of President Trump in the perimeter, which was exploited. So I don't think it's just a money problem. I mean, I'm willing to listen, but I want to hear about real reforms which are actually going to change operational outcomes.
All right, before we move on and talk a little bit more politics and then talk about what happened in Israel, we have some new news to report there. On your Transparency Act that you passed, since it passed the Senate, do you expect it to pass the House and be signed into law?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. We're going to encourage our House members, including the Speaker, to put it on the suspension calendar and get it to the President's desk as soon as possible.
What Democrats did you get in the Senate?
Well, I think the Democrats basically realized that they couldn't oppose the bill, which is why we passed it unanimously in the Senate yesterday, because they didn't like the optics of that, and it sort of conflicted with their shell game they have going on and their claim of reduced numbers. So I think it's a good time for us to get it through the House and to the president's desk, and then let's have the facts so we can deal with the facts instead of playing this continued shell game.
Interesting. So, Senator, I know you know Senator Ted Cruz had a tough race for his seat. Liz Cheney showed up yesterday to endorse his opponent. How do you explain Liz Cheney, a conservative from a conservative family, seeing that Ted Cruz is the problem?
It's a mystery to me. I don't really understand it. Because how can you endorse a candidate that opposes your most fundamental values and beliefs when it comes to public policy and the direction of the country, the size and the role of government in our lives? Ted Cruz is a fighter. He believes in limited government and lower taxes and national security. Ted's a good senator, and I'm enthusiastically supporting his reelection. He will win. But it will be a very expensive Senate race, in part because you have people like Liz Cheney, because of personal spite or some vendetta, decide to try to help Colin Allred. But Ted will win in the end, but he can't take his foot off the gas.
He passed the Senate Southern Border Transparency Act, one of the few things to get done in election year. Senator John Cornyn, thanks for that, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, we're going to go to Israel, and we're going to talk to Ariel Lightstone, switch topics. He served as senior advisor to Ambassador David Friedman over in Israel for 4 years. There are more explosions in Lebanon. I'll explain.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. We're following the story now. We heard about the explosions with the pagers that took place yesterday. Brilliant move. It looks like Israel would be involved. They certainly benefited, where every Hezbollah operative that was carrying a pager had an explode around 3:30 in the afternoon, it seems, over in Lebanon, where Hezbollah calls home and dominates the government. Nasrallah, sadly, was not hurt, but a lot of other officials did. 12 lost their lives. Thousands were hurt. We understand there's been a second series of explosions, possibly some from walkie-talkies. We're starting to get to the bottom of it now. Reuters has the story, and we're getting some video now, which looks like some pretty big explosions. So that's Hezbollah for the past few months since October 8th has been rocketing Israel on a regular basis, clearing out most of those border towns. And because of that, about 60,000 to 80,000 people can't go about their lives. Ariel Lightstone served as senior advisor to Ambassador David Friedman over in Israel for 4 years. Ariel, welcome back. How would you characterize this operation? It seems brilliant.
Yeah, I think since the 67 war, which is the famous Six-Day War, where Israel was able to catch the enemy aircraft on the ground and enable sort of this lightning victory, I'm not positive there's been such a successful preemptive attack, again, assuming that Israel is behind this, not only yesterday's attack, but no, today it is confirmed that a second series of communication devices held by Hezbollah commanders and commandos have now gone off as well. It's the sheer audacity of this is rather impressive.
Yeah, so Reuters reporting communications devices used by Lebanon armed group Hezbollah detonated Wednesday afternoon across the country's south and the southern suburbs. The source said it was not clear if the equipment were pagers. At least one of the blasts heard took place near a funeral organized by Hezbollah for those killed the previous day, confirming the explosions in Beirut. There's also some explosions, we understand, in Syria, because I guess some Hezbollah located there. But if you look at Israel, they have no choice. Something's got to stop Hezbollah, and it's not going to be the Lebanese government. They are the Lebanese government. The Iranians are behind it. We're not putting any pressure on anybody. So they have to take things into their own hands, don't they?
They absolutely do. And one thing that will be fascinating, we probably won't know it for another 48 hours, but how many members of the Lebanese government had their pager or their walkie-talkie explode? We know the Iranian ambassador to Lebanon. This has basically become the scarlet letter, the who's who who's actively involved in a U.S.-designated terror organization who is actively trying to destroy the state of Israel, are now being picked off one at a time. I don't mean to sense any giddiness. There is none of that. But if you look at the 100,000 Israelis who have not been in their homes for 11 months and the fear and the terror that they have to live in based upon indiscriminate rocket fire, the pinpoint attack on the people promulgating those attacks is incredibly impressive.
So right now, Netanyahu is sitting back, not taking responsibility. Hezbollah has not reacted yet, just condemned and assumed and pointed fingers. How do you think this plays out? What is the next move? I never thought the next move was going to be Israel, but it looks like there's a second, maybe another phase coming to them.
Yeah, it didn't make sense that yesterday would be the first phase, because in advance of a ground attack, it would make sense. To conclude something would make sense, but to sit as an isolated incident on a Tuesday, there were actually intelligence officials who said that perhaps it could even be accidental. I mean, this is a Trump card for many Trump cards, so why would it be played? So having a second action today and possibly something else coming down the pipe could make sense. Prime Minister Netanyahu has canceled his visit to the United States of America, the UN General Assembly, which he normally attends and enjoys greatly. So there certainly is concern or anticipation of repercussions coming down the pipe.
What do you think the chances of Defense Minister Gallant surviving?
That's an excellent question. It was all wrapped up that he was going to be gone as of yesterday, and then this happens. I do think that he will not make it to what they call the holidays. The holidays start October 1st. I think by October 1st, he will be replaced in the government by Guido Nsar as the defense minister.
Wow. Is it because they were forced together through this coalition government?
No, actually, Gallant has been a strong supporter of Prime Minister Netanyahu's going back 20 years in Likud or 15 years in Likud. They took a difference of opinion when it came to the judicial reform that's already 2 years ago. And they've taken a difference of opinions regarding the war goals in Gaza. And the defense minister has publicly disagreed with the prime minister. And the prime minister says we have to be at least united within our own government. They sit in the same party. So actually, in a crazy change of events, Prime Minister Netanyahu is bringing in an opposition party in order to bring greater unity into his government, which is a wild thing that only happens in parliamentary democracies.
Is that a good move?
Well, Prime Minister Netanyahu believes that he needs government stability. And instead of having somebody from the inside working against him, he's going to bring in seven seats from the outside who will no longer be working against him from the outside and isolate the one guy on his side who's been working against him. So it gives greater stability to the government. If there's unity of purpose from the war cabinet or from the security cabinet that is promoting the war, then that'll help Israel move forward. Having dissenting opinions from the same cabinet does not help.
I hear you. But I think it's also, there was a report earlier this morning I wanted to follow up on. It looks like there was two hostages were rescued.
I have not seen that yet. No.
Okay.
I'm not saying it hasn't happened. I haven't seen that report.
All right. And Gaza, the negotiations are not going anywhere because one of the main reasons the prime minister says we will continue to watch the Philadelphia border and we're going to continue to surveil and have a presence there. Are you in support of that?
Well, there's no ceasefire because the United States of America can't negotiate anything for garbage. The United States of America has been mealy-mouthed on sort of some sense of like Hamas is due the same seat at the table as the state of Israel. The United States of America put all of our power and all of our leverage against Hamas's supporters. There would have been a deal 10 months ago. There continues not to be a deal because the United States of America hasn't picked the side of good here against the side of evil, and therefore Israel is standing up for itself on itself.
Yeah, it's I have no idea what's going on behind closed doors, but I know nothing's been effective. The CIA director, the Secretary of State, they do equally blame each other, the Hamas and Israel. Ari Lightstone, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. When we come back, keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We've got a busy hour coming your way. And, of course, we've got a lot of breaking news to go over, which has been happening this election cycle, which has a lot to do with the election sometimes, but not all the time, especially today. Josh Krashauer, Fox News radio political analyst and editor-in-chief of Jewish Insider, works for Axios. Bob Cusack is standing by, editor-in-chief of The Hill. We are looking at a couple of stories that are taking place right now. We know the President of the United States is going to be in place tonight to do a rally over in Uniondale, New York. The theory behind that is interesting. But for now, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I think, unfortunately, Israel's in a scenario where that offensive is already there. The ability to put what is likely low-volatility explosives in such a sophisticated manner across hundreds, if not thousands, of devices is really a remarkable feat.
Cameron Hamilton, a terror expert, death by device. Israel did it yesterday and today. Deadly. It's cinematic precision, booby-trapped thousands of pagers, and now maybe walkie-talkies with explosives that detonated near simultaneously to those Hezbollah people holding these apparatus, killing 12, wounding nearly 3,000.
Number two.
He made several spontaneous comments that caused them to interview him more deeply. They referred him to the Homeland Security Investigation Unit. That is basically the FBI, the Homeland Security Department, and HSI declined to further investigate him.
John Solomon weighing in. So many questions swirling around the second assassination attempt of Donald Trump. As both Harris and Biden reach out, I say send in the SEALs.
Number one.
This whole idea, if you like me, you're good, and if you don't, you're bad. I mean, I've been the victim of this. I don't hate the guy. I hate the people who vote for him. I think you're stupid. I do. I'll be honest with you. I have no respect for you.
Good. 70 million people got this signal very clearly, Howard Stern. He used to be the greatest counterculture, always entertaining and interesting. Now I just find him old, crotchety, and uninformed, tracking the trail. The former king of all media tells Donald Trump supporters he hates them. I'm quoting. Plus, Trump speaks at Flint on the economy, rallies on Long Island for some battleground staters in the House, while VP Harris rambles with softballs in mind-numbing event for the black journalists meet and greet. Bob Cusack, welcome back.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good. Something that's not necessarily up your alley, but you know what's going on in Israel. Stunning news. I guess a couple of drops of explosive liquid put together with a switch in pagers ordered by Hezbollah, delivered with this explosive device, detonated, it seems, by the Mossad or the Israelis, killing 12, wounding thousands. And then a second wave just happened now. We're seeing some video in. This is pretty stunning.
It is. It's very stunning. And the technology is just astounding. And a lot of people want to know how this happened. And I tell you, Israel's intelligence service and their clandestine service, they're very impressive. The United States is saying that they did not get a heads up on this, but at the same time, that's a little suspect because U.S. intelligence, I know they've not been perfect, but they pick up a lot of stuff. But this, I think, is a remarkable story that there's a lot to learn from it. Who was even talking about pagers in recent history? So the fact that they were able to pull this off is a remarkable military feat.
Well, we know Al-Qaeda stopped communicating when it was revealed in the Senate that we were tapping their phones. They just stopped communicating. They would have human couriers. With Nasrallah and Hezbollah, they said, get rid of your phones. The Israelis are tracking us, hence the assassinations that have taken place and the precision of their bombs. So he says, use these pagers, can't be detected. And that was their undoing. Stunning. Couple other things. When it comes to this election, I'm amazed at these celebrities weighing in. First off, Taylor Swift is beyond popular, multi-billionaire. I get it, doesn't need one more day on the stage. I understand it. But according to one study, since she endorsed Kamala Harris, 8% of people said they're more likely to vote for Harris. 16% said they're less likely. So that blew up. But it didn't stop Billie Eilish for weighing in. Listen to her. Cut 11.
We are voting for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz because they are fighting to protect our reproductive freedom, our planet, and our democracy.
We can't let extremists control our lives, our freedoms, and our future.
All right, so we don't understand. Her and her brother are endorsing, and they're very off script on that. So they're endorsing Kamala Harris. And then Pharrell Williams weighs in and says, why are any celebrities and musicians weighing in? We should just stop it. How effective are these celebrity endorsements traditionally?
And I do think, Brian, they're overrated. Now, Taylor Swift's got 280 million Instagram followers, and I do think that, you know, she's apparently helped or encouraged a lot of people to register to vote. That said, I do think there's maybe outside the Taylor Swift sphere, I think there can be more of a backlash. It's almost kind of like that we've seen backlashes on editorial endorsements where a popular newspaper will endorse a candidate. And a lot of people go against that candidate, which is usually a Democrat. So I don't think so. And I think honestly, the Harris campaign has to be careful about trotting out a lot of celebrity endorsements, because celebrities aren't real people. They're not everyday people. They're real people, but they're, you know what I mean? They're not everyday people who are trying to make a living and living paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes they were, but they aren't.
Yes.
Here's Howard's. This stunned me. And cut 12.
This whole idea, if you like me, you're good. And if you don't, you're bad. I mean, I've been the victim of this. I don't hate the guy. I hate the people who vote for him. I think they're stupid. I do. I'll be honest with you. I have no respect for you.
I mean, talk about something that's just negative for his career. I know he's got more money than he'll ever dream of. But is that something you hear a lot? I cannot believe you hate 70 million people. It's usually the opposite. Don't like the candidate, but if you know, I don't hate the people. Not Howard Stern, just the opposite.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. And having listened to him growing up in Manhattan.
I know.
What came to mind when I heard that was Hillary Clinton's deplorables. You can go after the candidate. I talked to somebody just this week who is not a fan of Donald Trump at all, but made the case. I don't hate the people who support him. That's up to them. But unfortunately, as you know, Brian, a lot of relationships sometimes in the Republican Party, but certainly with Republicans and Democrats, their relationships have ended over politics. You know, when I was growing up, and you didn't care who you were dating, whether Republican or Democrat. Times have totally changed, and now there are dating apps that totally go in the other direction, where you can find somebody who either likes your candidate or if not, then you move on.
So we're getting some interviews now from Kamala Harris. She's going to do Oprah tomorrow. She did one on last Friday. To me, it was a disaster. She looked really nervous with the local ABC anchor. And then yesterday was a series of softballs in front of the black journalist. And a lot of it sounds like the stump speech from a seat. Here's an example. Cut 5.
And so my plan for the economy includes what I imagine and believe and call an opportunity economy. What we can do to grow an opportunity economy. Part of my plan under my opportunity economy, what I'm talking about in terms of building an opportunity economy.
Same rhetoric over and over again. Did you watch any of it? What'd you think?
Yeah, I did. And I didn't see the whole thing yesterday, but obviously a very different type of questioning than when
you think?
Trump was questioned. Yeah, just a bit. But even though she's done maybe at most a handful of interviews, whether it's a local or national level, there's still so many unanswered questions. She has not answered questions of why she supported reparations for slavery, setting up a commission on that. She supported it in the Senate. We contacted her office. They wouldn't say why she changed her positions on Medicare for All. I mean, that's what I find astounding, even though there have been a handful of interviews, that she's not been pressed again and again when she doesn't answer the question and goes into a 1 or 2 minute speech. Hopefully that'll change. I know that CNN's Van Jones is encouraging her to do more media interviews, and she should, because there's a lot we don't know about how she would govern.
So does Charlemagne the God. I have no idea why she was not doing interviews. Now she's doing them, but they're so easy and she's so nervous. The goal is in Politico story today. Now, I know you don't read it because you have the Hill, but Politico came out with a story saying that the goal is not to make news. Don't drop the ball. They must believe on the Democratic side, David Plouffe and company, that she's just ahead and that by not being Donald Trump, she's going to win. Have you talked to Democrats who think that?
I have. I've talked to them because I think is a striking thing is that do Democrats not remember 2016? This is exactly what Hillary Clinton did.
Only the race is closer.
You're right. She tried to play it safe, thought she could coast to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. No one coasts to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. You have to go for it. Obama had to take on Hillary, and he beat her in an epic primary and then won the presidency. Trump came out of nowhere, never run for a political office, went for it. You know, as I've told people, the first time we interviewed Trump, they said, okay, you get 15 minutes, and he gave us 80. That was not being careful or cautious. And I think there's a real danger. She's being way too cautious.
So listen to this. You talk about difference. You just heard a little from Harris. Remember, a few weeks ago, when Trump sat down with the same group, different reporters, but same group, cut three.
You have told four congresswomen of color who were American citizens to go back to where they came from. You've attacked black journalists, calling them a loser, saying the questions that they ask are, quote, stupid and racist. Why should black voters trust you after you have used language like that?
Okay, fine. Here's Kamala Harris, cut four.
Your opponent and Republicans have at times weaponized you laughing. Why is joy important to you to insert into this election?
Well, sometimes I think, and I'll say to whoever the young people are who are watching this, there are some times when your adversaries will try and turn your strength into a weakness. Don't you let them.
So she was able to handle the joy question. We know Trump never could have handled the joy question. I mean, do you believe this?
I was at some different questions, that's for sure. But listen, you know, it is one of those things where people have to decide. They get to see that Trump is out there. They can either like Trump or not. Most people have very strong opinions one way or the other. But he's out there. He's not afraid. He's not afraid of the media. He'll tussle with the media. If he doesn't like your questions, then I've experienced this. He'll cut you off. He'll give you honest answers. And that's – you got to have – there's got to be – you got to be genuine, I think, or at least voters think you're genuine when you win the White House. We've seen problems with that with the losers of presidential elections, including Al Gore, including John Kerry, including Mitt Romney, where people are like, I don't get a handle on this guy, so I'm not sure how likable they are. And I do think that she would be wise to take the Van Jones advice and do more of these because, again, what if she wins? And she certainly could win. Is she going to go back to the stances of 2019, 2020, or is she going to be a moderate? I mean, the progressives, and we've written this, the progressives, they wink and a nod. They know where she is. So they're not giving her any flack like they gave to Joe Biden when he was running for president.
Which is problematic for the country. If Bernie Sanders is happy, I'm worried. So
right. And Bernie Sanders said she's being pragmatic to win. Okay, but what are her real beliefs, and how is she going to govern other than, as you say, she mentions, you know, opportunity economy, my values haven't changed. Okay, those are good sound bites, but they don't really mean that much.
No, it means that she's more Bernie. She's still Bernie. By the way, the Hispanic vote came out, and the ABC did a poll. Harris got 58 to Trump's 41. Is that high for a Republican, the 41?
That is. I mean, that's a decent number. It's not a great number. His numbers among Hispanics, like everything else, were better under when Biden was the nominee. But that's in that range that George W. Bush got when he won.
Which is amazing.
But I've talked to Mark Penn, a pollster that we partner with, and he says, yes, the African-American vote, the black vote, has come home for Harris. But the Latino vote is very much up in the air, and he had a very good point in our last webinar where he said Latinos – everyone's concerned about inflation, but Latinos are especially concerned about inflation, and that's not a good thing for the Biden-Harris administration.
And the whole thing is the economy. Trump should just nail this. Inflation's up 19% since he left. Groceries, 21%. Home, shelter, whatever you want to call it, 22%. Real estate, the average earnings, minus 1.7%. That matters. Here's the Mark Penn you just referred to really set the stage well. Cut 14.
All these polls are half and half. My last poll came out 50-50. There's some movements, but this race is not over. There's about 19% who still haven't made up their mind yet. For sure, they're going to be looking at both these candidates. Anyone who tells you they know how this race is going to come out, it's just flipping a coin.
So is that what you're getting from your insider webinar partnership?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We always have we start off the webinar, and I ask Mark, how would you describe your findings, your poll findings for this month? And his one-word answer was tie, that this race is tied. Either side can win. And you've seen that. We've seen predictions. Oh, Trump's going to win at the assassination attempt. And he certainly was on the road to victory. And now you're hearing a lot of people, oh, Harris has gotten this in the bag. We are so far from it. And as Mark noted, there are a lot of people out there, even though they're in the minority, they're about 20 to 25%, who still are weighing their options. And the candidate who gets most of that 20 to 25% is going to win this thing.
Yeah. I don't know. You're still there, Bob. Kind of cut up a little abruptly. But, okay, lastly, just to wrap it up, the assassination, the second one. The first one he got a boost from. He actually has – he bounced back praising Secret Service, came back cool, calm, and composed. Your thoughts about what that might do to the polls?
Well, we talked to some Republican senators yesterday, and they think it's going to help the campaign that he's constantly being targeted. I do think it's good that to lower the temperature that both Biden and Harris contacted Trump, and Trump took the call, and he said some nice things afterward. That's a good thing. But again, going back to your point on the economy, just he's got to hammer the economy. I mean, that's where he wins, and name calling and other things. That's not going to help him with that 20% that's still deciding how to vote.
Yeah, I think maybe reaching out to the other side to a degree will not alienate your base, but might bring over undecideds. Bob Cusack, editor-in-chief of The Hill. Thanks.
Thanks, Brian.
Great. Pick it up. It's always interesting to go get their perspective in the morning. When we come back, your call is 1-866-408-7669. Quick note. I want to meet you in Peekskill October 20th, BrianKilmeade.com. History, Liberty, and Laughs on stage. VIP opportunities. I get to meet with you, talk with you before the show. BrianKilmeade.com.
It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go out to Skip, listen to WSBA in New York, Pennsylvania. Hey, Skip.
In New York, Pennsylvania, we're a small town of 46,000 people with a county population of about 500,000. I've heard from people who work at the immigration office in New York that we're processing anywhere from 80 to 90 Haitians that don't speak English, can't even read Creole or write Creole. We're processing in our small community daily. And then if that adds up to 50 weeks a year, that's over 20,000 immigrants coming to York County, York, Pennsylvania.
Have you seen Haitians in your community, immigrants, illegal immigrants in your community?
I live out in the suburbs, so I don't see where they would live.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth looking into. I think there's two or three small towns in Pennsylvania being overrun like Springfield. That could be detrimental. That should be brought up. Forget about cats and dogs. Just focus on the people. And they might be great people, but this is not what you do to small towns that don't have a lot of political power.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All these polls are half and half. My last poll came out 50-50. There's some movements, but this race is not over. There's about 19% who still haven't made up their mind yet. For sure, they're going to be looking at both these candidates. Anyone who tells you they know how this race is going to come out is just flipping a coin.
And that is a guy that does polls for a living, Mark Penn, who also called for an investigation into the what ABC knew and the moderators moderators knew about, or how they collaborated perhaps with the Harris side in order to get her the questions or collaborate on the fact checks or make sure there was none. Josh Krasshauer, Fox News Radio political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider, joins us now. Josh, is that your sense, what Mark Penn just said his numbers reveal? We're really tied?
Yeah, look, I would give, looking at the numbers, and there's a new Fox News poll coming out this evening, which I'm eager to see, and that'll affect my thinking about where the race stands. But I would give a very slight edge for Kamala Harris after the debate performance. You're starting to see some of the numbers from reputable pollsters post-debate showing that, you know, battleground states nationally her with a slight lead, but this is very, very close. I mean, the race has not markedly changed. We've talked about this before, Brian, that, you know, in a polarized country like ours is, even the biggest moments are not going to dramatically change the race a whole lot. So what I see right now, it obviously is going to come down to the most critical and close battleground states. And Pennsylvania, Georgia, Nevada are going to be the three I'm watching most closely. We have polling out of Georgia actually showing Trump ahead by a little bit, according to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution poll this morning. And there's some new polling in Pennsylvania showing Kamala Harris up a little bit. So this is going to be as close as Mark Penn suggests. If Harris wins Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, that's probably ball game for her, and she may be on a path to doing that. But it's very close in Pennsylvania. And then the three states I'm watching: Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Nevada.
And North Carolina is in play, don't you think?
Yeah, look, that's a state that Trump is playing defense in. If North Carolina goes to Kamala Harris, I think it's very hard for Trump to win this election. So that's an example, Brian, of Harris energizing the Democratic base when she was when she emerged as the nominee, replacing Joe Biden. She's put states like Georgia a little more competitive, North Carolina a little more competitive. I still think Donald Trump has the advantage in North Carolina. There are a lot of he's got a lot of base supporters in that state. He's won that state twice. Even Mitt Romney carried North Carolina in 2012. So I still would give Trump the advantage in North Carolina. But if Kamala Harris flipped North Carolina and it's got, 16 electoral votes, that would be really tough for Trump to overcome.
So, I mean, it's amazing to me that she's going to get away with this. If she goes ahead and wins, she'll get away with this by saying the same stump speech in conversation. And I think she did fine on the debate. I'm not putting that down. I just don't know what she knew ahead of time. And it's amazing how those issues came her way, whether it's Obamacare, election 2020 or October or January 6th. I mean, those are three topics. The whole second half were all hers. And the president, former president, was playing defense. But listen to the similarities in which she mentions the same thing over and over again. I'll give you an example here when she talks about opportunity economy. Cut five.
And so my plan for the economy includes what I imagine and believe and call an opportunity economy, what we can do to grow an opportunity economy. Part of my plan under my opportunity economy, what I'm talking about in terms of building an opportunity economy.
I mean, you bring in your stump speech to conversations.
Yeah, I mean, look, Brian, she said pretty much the same lines at the convention, at the debate, and now, you know, in the very small number of interviews she's done. This is someone who's not confident enough to actually talk policy and not to speak with more authoritativeness about what she would do if she's elected. There was a good nugget in the New York Times this morning that she's actually done fewer interviews since she's been the nominee than Joe Biden did in the final 2 months of when he was a candidate, which, remember, Biden didn't do a whole lot of interviews either. So it is a vulnerability. Look, if I'm the Trump campaign, I would challenge. She said she wants to do another debate. I'd challenge her to a debate on Fox. You know, have a second debate, have a chance to relitigate a lot of the points where she's vulnerable. I mean, Donald Trump has a lot of advantages on the issues. He has the opportunity that he missed during that first debate to put her on the defensive. I'm not exactly sure what the Trump campaign strategy is, but I'd be playing aggressive and I'd be looking for accepting a second debate and taking her word that she wants to debate again and use that as an opportunity to prep and to do the work and to challenge her on all the issues from the economy to immigration to crime to foreign policy where polls show she is vulnerable and people don't know where she stands on these key issues.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on there. Since the assassination attempt, you see that she reached out to Trump. Trump reached out. Joe Biden reached out to Trump. They had pleasant conversations. He said it was a pleasant conversation. They said it was a pleasant conversation. Do you think that type of tone, along with some empathy for a guy that's been now been the subject of a second assassination attempt, that couldn't do something in the polls?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's hard to say. I mean, there was that brief moment of people toning down the rhetoric after what happened in Pennsylvania. It lasted a fairly short time and then quickly kind of evaporated. People moved on. I think it's we're actually not serious enough about the climate of violence and extremism in the country and the fact that you had this second guy come fairly close to Donald Trump in Florida. I mean, it's alarming. And I think it is reassuring that you had both the president, Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris call Donald Trump, say, you know, they wished him well. It sounds like both were very brief conversations. But, it reminds everyone that this country's on edge. Like we are kind of in a political tinderbox, and everyone should really be careful the type of rhetoric that they use, because some crazy person certainly could get set off.
Josh Kroshauer talking with us. Before I get to Israel, I do want to talk about, there should be something to be said for J.D. Vance, who does three Sunday shows, at least one a week, and he did three last weekend. And he's doing interview after interview, subject of a show. Tim Walz has done none, almost no one-on-ones. Here's what he said yesterday at a time in which everyone's denying that their words are inflammatory. Cut 10.
Now, I did teach for a while. I think I'm a pretty good teacher. And I would always give my students extra chances to learn. Sometimes you don't learn the lesson the first time. So Donald Trump did not learn the lesson the first time. But the good news is he's going to learn the lesson in November when he gets to the This damn TV show of his has been on too long. Let's just cancel it in November. Let's just cancel it.
So, I mean, that's not really going to, I guess you're still fighting it out, but he talks about canceling, talks about weird, talks about threats, and some of that stuff is, I guess, is not going to change with him.
Well, look, it's interesting because Kamala Harris isn't offering a whole lot of new ideas or policies or clarity on how she would govern, and Tim Walz is her running mate, so he can't really go beyond what she's saying. So he has also avoided, giving these unscripted or interviews with the press where we could learn more about what their administration would do if elected. We do have a debate. What is it, October 1st, the vice presidential debate between Walz and Vance, which I think is going to be pretty instructive. Now, Vance has, to his credit, been doing a lot of Sunday show interviews. He's also, been pretty testy and he had, spread some inaccurate information with the whole Springfield, Ohio situation. So I don't know if he's helped himself as much given some of the outcome of those interviews. But sure, like that is a model, I think. And it's good that you have Vance taking questions from the press. And that should be a model for what Harris and Walz should be doing. But look, I think Walz is just as cautious. He's following the lead from the number one. And she's not taking a whole lot of questions. He's not trying to upstage her.
Yeah, but I thought J.D. Vance was fighting for the right cause, but the whole dogs and cats eating is a rabbit hole.
Exactly.
So it was just, it's a waste of time. You should just say, it's not the point. The point is you got 20,000 people in a community of 50,000 and they can't absorb it. It's killing the school system, killing the economy. The roads are dangerous. They don't know how to drive. We give them license without instructions. They don't know the languages. We don't have people that understand them. That's the issue. Meanwhile,
that's right.
That's it.
And that's politically, you score political points that way when you have to make things up, which you don't need to make things up. We've been talking about this, Brian, throughout the country in cities that have had real strains on their social services because a lot of it is illegal. I mean, at least the Haitian population in Springfield is there through a legal program. There are a lot of illegal immigrants coming through cities across the country, straining social services, schools, and it's a real challenge. And the Democrats don't really have a solution for it. But you don't need to make stuff up to talk about that. It doesn't help their chances by doing so.
Well, I just think this White House, the Biden White House, and definitely the Vice President's office, the most inept communications team ever. KJP is a disastrous press secretary, probably at her all-time worst yesterday, a day or 2 days after the assassination attempt. Peter Ducey, I think, with a great question. I would tell you if they weren't. He does a great job. I think you agree. But listen to this. Cut 25.
It's been only 2 days since somebody allegedly tried to kill Donald Trump again. And you're here at the podium in the White House briefing room calling him a threat. How many more assassination attempts on Donald Trump until the president and the vice president and you pick a different word to describe Trump other than threat?
Peter, if anything from this administration, I actually completely disagree with the premise of your question, the question that you're asking. It is also incredibly dangerous in the way that you're asking it because American people are watching. And to say that from an administration who has consistently condemned political violence.
And she went on to say January 6th. They use the word threat. She doesn't like being called out for using the word threat. I don't even understand her point.
Well, Brian, you heard the sigh and then you heard sort of her turning the question upside down by saying that the question itself was the threat, which is insane. I mean, the point that Peter's making, rightly so, is that the language calling Trump a fascist and making up very overheated rhetoric to say what would happen if he's elected, that's what Peter's asking about. And there's no kind of self, you know, there's no pause to say, hey, maybe we need to tone things down. Maybe this is a moment to take a deep breath and kind of to realize that we're all in this together and we don't need to use that type of overheated rhetoric in describing our political opposition. But look, this is a bipartisan problem. And Trump blamed Harris and Biden for, you know, there was a lot of finger pointing going on. But that's not a constructive moment. And I think Peter gave Corinne Jean-Pierre a real opportunity to turn the temperature down. And she sort of kind of reiterated the White House talking points, arguing again that Trump is a threat in their view.
So I don't know if you heard, there's been a second wave of explosions in Lebanon with Hezbollah fighters rumored. I think that through walkie-talkies or other communication devices yesterday, it looks like they were able to detonate the pagers, which killed 12, wounded thousands. They were holding pagers because they didn't trust their phones. They thought they were being surveilled. And it looks like somehow the Mossad got some explosive devices, some explosive liquid in there, and a switch. They were able to call those pagers massively. When it heated up, the explosion took place. Wherever that pager was, you have a massive explosion. So if it's in your pants, you know what's gone. And if it's in your hand, you know what's missing. So this is a massive win for, I think, Israel, for these fighters, because you get the fighters, you don't get innocents, hopefully. And these guys have been relentless since October 8th. And now we find a second wave of explosions inside Lebanon. Tell me where this heads, Josh.
Well, look, the focus in Israel is the threat that Hezbollah has been posing on the north. You have tens of thousands of Israelis that can't even live in their homes. They've been evacuated because of rockets that Hezbollah has been firing. So this is another round of trying to deter these terrorists, these Hezbollah terrorists, without, you know, we'll see if this escalates into a larger war. But boy, this is about as targeted and brilliant an operation as we've ever seen, and maybe in Israeli history. Just literally getting they need to get these pagers because they want to be tracked on their cell phones. And it turns out all these thousands of pagers were rigged with these either explosives or some kind of sensor that blew up at the same time. And it sounds like this operation may still be going on based on the headlines that you're talking about today as well. I mean, when you hear people tutting Israel for, you know, civilian, you know, people who collateral damage in these military strikes, this is about as targeted an operation as you can get. Almost everyone who was killed or injured were terrorists, were people involved in Hezbollah and military operations. So this is kind of a real success. We'll see if it deters Hezbollah. We'll see if it leads to any reprisal. But it's a big victory for Israel, and it's part of their effort to deter a terrorist army, basically, on the northern border.
So what it is they say thousands of personal walkie-talkie radios were targeted today, which were ordered from the terror group 5 months ago around the same time of the deadly pagers. So look out. At least one of the new blasts heard took place right in the rear of a funeral organized by the terror group. Officials have yet to confirm the links between the two attacks. The pagers that were detonated on Tuesday were all the latest models acquired by Hezbollah months ago. They're supposed to be from a Taiwan company, ended up being from the Taiwan company says, we sold off that patent. And that's over. That comes out of Budapest. In Budapest, no one answers. It looks like it could be a shell company. So this thing's going to be unwound, perhaps, but the damage is done. If you are a Hezbollah fighter, between them blowing up your leaders, you must be freaked out today.
Well, this is chapter 4 or 5. I mean, Israel took out the top Hamas leader in Iran. They penetrated essentially what the equivalent of their Blair house, their presidential guest house, in an operation that must have taken many months to plan out in advance. I mean, they have penetrated. This is all, I mean, the big picture is Iran. Hezbollah is a proxy of Iran. Iran is trying to threaten Israel all around the country. And Israel has scored a number of intel victories, these impressive operations on their soil in their territory,
fighting for their survival, Josh. So
this is going to be a movie. I mean, this is going to be a movie, Brian. This is going to be one of those things that we'll be hearing a lot more about it. Maybe we'll see it in a movie.
I'd love a positive ending. No more Hamas in Gaza, and Hezbollah puts down the weapons. Josh Grashauer, I can hope. Thanks so much. Back in a moment, Brian, with your calls, and we'll find out if there's more to know.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go and give you an idea of how much more you need to know. For example, let's start in football, where it looks like we thought future superstar Bryce Young was going to star for the Panthers. Instead, he's been benched. Here's Ryan Leaf.
This organization has done nothing to try to help and develop a player that has so much expectation on him. I lay this at the feet of the organization completely. Bryce Young didn't choose to get drafted first overall. He had no say in it at all. He was very, very good in college, and he wanted to play football for a living. And so that's where he's at right now. And unfortunately, you know, I don't know what this means. The team's horrible. They're not very competitive. They're not very talented.
And now Andy Dalton will be starting the veteran. He understands what it was like. He had a lot of expectations and failed spectacularly. Next, Pharrell Williams blasts celebrities who speak out openly about politics. He says, Pharrell says he cares about the country and my people and feels there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but he's ready to take action. He thinks, what the heck, why don't you shut up? Nobody asked you. I'm sure he's talking about Taylor Swift and Billie Eilish.
I think people also then sounded off against him. They were very annoyed that he wasn't taking a stand.
Yeah, what can you do? I mean, he's taking a stand and not taking a stand. This way people don't know because maybe he doesn't care about politics. Is that possible? Not to have 50% of the people tick you off. Why doesn't he just be happy?
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.